Christiana Amanpour is with us now. I told you we were going to have a terrific hour. She, and I had a chance to see most of her documentary last night, not all of it, but she has a very important documentary that's coming up this Thursday, Generation Islam, which examines the battle over today's Muslim youth. She did some courageous reporting from Afghanistan and from Gaza for this, and some scenes that you just haven't seen before are on the television, and some extraordinary people. Well, she's been reporting on crises from many of the world's hotspots during her 26 years. Went by in a hurry, huh? At CNN, she has had many exclusive interviews with world leaders on the human consequences of natural disasters and global politics, has won top awards for all of her coverage. She was giving us her insight and reporting from inside Iran. We'll ask her about that, an update during their recent elections. And as you know, Afghanistan is going to be having elections next week, I believe. So her reporting from Afghanistan is just terrific and important as well. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Christiana Amanpour. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And we're happy to have her on the air. Christiana Amanpour, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure, Kathleen, and I was so interested to hear what you were just talking about with Mike about the really wonderful, fantastic Walter Cronkite. I was a small child when he was in his element. I wasn't even a journalist yet, and I'd only just come to the United States to learn how to be a journalist when he gave up the anchor chair. But a few years ago, I really did seek him out. I called his office. I talked to his longtime assistant, Marlene Adler, and we had a wonderful drink together in New York, and I just wanted to basically thank him for all that he stood for and to get some of the insights that perhaps could help me as I continue to try to, you know, channel my inner Walter Cronkite or my inner Edward R. Murrow as we try to do our best in this profession, which really I think we hold so dear.
Yeah, well, I think you're kind of the same cloth in many ways.
You know, I don't want to say that, but I know that I respect everything that he's done. And I'll tell you why, because just as Mike was saying, you know, the clip that you played that I could hear of the announcement of Martin Luther King's assassination, and before that, obviously, President Kennedy's, and all the things, including the Vietnam War and everything that Walter Cronkite reported, showed how massively important it was, it is, and it should be in the future for journalists to report the facts, not to be over-impassioned and over-involved, but to get into the heart of the matter as a professional journalist, and by doing so, by being on the ground, by earning your stripes, by being out there, being the eyes and ears to witness what's going on in the world, and to be able to creditably and trustworthy, in a trustworthy manner, bring that back to your audience, is so important. And no amount of commentary and no amount of opinion and no amount of blogging can take away the
right
value of real journalism.
Right.
And when someone like Walter passes, it reminds us all of that again.
Right. You know, and I was struck by his reporting in World War II, as I'm struck by your taking us to places in your documentary that people just have not seen. There's striking images. There are a couple that will stay with me for a long time, Christiane, and one of them is you're in the middle of nowhere in Afghanistan, and there are these hundreds of children sitting out in the hot sun trying to go to school. It just, what an image that was. And I think about all that you had to do to give us that image.
You know, it was an amazing sight for me as well. And I've seen a lot, particularly in those countries and in that part of the world. And if I could just try to describe it for your listeners. We got out of an armored personnel carrier with the U.S. forces who were promising to build a school in that area. It was in the middle of nowhere. It was actually in a dangerous area where just before we had arrived, there had been an attack on a U.S. Military troop going to try to do the same kind of work there. But what was phenomenal was that under the blazing sun were hundreds and hundreds of children just sitting in the dirt, in organized rows as if they were having outdoor classes. No walls, no ceilings, no desks, no chairs, just a blackboard, you know, leaning against a rock and a teacher there with a piece of chalk, and trying to teach these children. You know, several teachers, one for each group of people sitting on the floor outside. And in that one scene, it said to me, there is so much hope here. There is so much possibility. Americans should not throw up their hands in despair. They should really understand and believe that what can be done in Afghanistan is huge and amazing. It doesn't cost too much, but it requires effort, a lot of effort by the U.S. government, a coherent policy in the civilian nation building, and it will pay huge, huge dividends. And those children who were so poor and who wanted so much just to learn and were even learning English, they were counting in English, wanted to be part of the world. They knew about the internet. They wanted to be connected. They knew about America. They knew about what was going on, and they wanted to be part of the world. And therein lies the hope for their future, for the future of the region, and for our future as well.
Yeah, and you realize that you have to have that because you can contrast that so vividly with some of these fundamentalist schools where people have no idea what the internet is. They don't know math. They don't know science. They don't know who the president of the United States is. It's a pretty different scene, right?
Precisely. I mean, worlds apart, literally worlds apart. And what we did was we profiled really unsung heroes, Americans, who were going out trying in their own way to really win the hearts and minds of these young people. Because the documentary, the idea for the documentary was inspired by President Obama's inauguration, where he said that the United States needs a new beginning with the Muslim world. He offered an outstretched hand if they unclenched the fist. And he also said that, the U.S. cannot afford to have yet another generation of Muslims viewing the U.S. as the enemy, which has been the sad case in the last several years since 9/11. And so we went out to see and to test this this premise. And what we came back with was this amazing and resounding yes, that out there people do want to take the extended hand of friendship from the United States. They do want to be friends and, as I say, part of the world. But what they need is for the U.S. to keep the promises that it made when it routed the Taliban and al-Qaeda, basic things like bringing electricity, helping with agriculture, trying to get rid of the poppies, trying to, help provide a representative political sort of representation for those countries, and that these people will respond. And I think that's really very optimistic. It's very important. And I hope the U.S. really does that.
And the documentary shows that, indeed, it does work.
Yes, and that, again, is the dirty little truth that nobody wants to believe or accept. And, the sad fact is that there are so many of those stories out there. There's so much of that reality out there. But because foreign news, is so desperately lacking and in such short supply on the U.S. airwaves, American people don't get to see some of the positive things that are going on. They get bombarded with the headlines and the facts and figures. And most of it is bad news, as it often is with breaking news. But recent studies have shown that the American people show news fatigue because of that bombardment with facts, figures, and breaking news, and because of the lack of in-depth coverage and the lack of context. So what we tried to do was go out and put, for instance, the situation in Afghanistan in context, that there is a war going on still 8 years after the Taliban was routed, that the people... 4 years ago, 84% of the Afghan people supported the U.S. mission there, supported the forces of progress. That number has dropped in half. That support level has dropped in half in the last 4 years because of the military operations that have killed too many civilians as they go out looking for the Taliban, and because promises that were made have not been kept. And I think what we're trying to say in this documentary is, look, if there's a coherent civilian strategy for rebuilding that country, if there's as much civilian effort as there is military effort, then it will succeed. It will succeed. And do you know what? At the top levels of the U.S. military, they said the same thing to me, mm-hmm. that there must be a very, very strategic, smart, and intense civilian effort, not just the military effort, because the U.S. will not win this by military bombs alone.
And what about this military effort? Could it undermine, because we've missed our targets, as you report, and when we do miss targets and innocent civilians have been killed, the Taliban knows, well, these people are ripe for coming over to our side. Does it require a change in strategy, U.S. military strategy? How what are the effects of these bombs gone astray?
Well, the effect is devastating, not just on the families and the villages, but on the support for the U.S. mission, what it's doing, and support for those democratically elected leaders in Afghanistan who are backed by the United States. So it has a very bad effect. It drains hearts and minds rather than winning hearts and minds. And so there has been already instructions from the top, from Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to the commanders in Afghanistan to be very careful about these attacks. Obviously, they have to go after the targets that they're looking for, and there has been some success in the military operations against al-Qaeda cells and mostly against Taliban cells in Afghanistan, indeed Taliban leadership as well. But the fallout from the excessive civilian casualties is really, really damaging to the United States. So there has been, as I say, some attempt to be careful about this, and it couldn't come a moment too soon.
Right.
But at the same time, the new administration strategy with Richard Holbrooke, who's a special envoy for Afghanistan and Pakistan, talking about a ramping up not just of the military but of the civilian effort as well, that is just so unbelievably necessary. And we followed these amazing characters, people like Greg Mortensen.
Oh, I'm so glad you followed him. People love him here.
Three Cups of Tea, about
yes.
building schools in Afghanistan and Pakistan. And we saw him actually do it. And it was just remarkable, because what he does is provide the funds, raise the money for the building of these schools, but he gets the villagers to invest themselves and their village and their community in this by providing the labor and providing the land for the schools. And once they build this school, for relatively little money compared to what it would cost anywhere else, what it does is it gives the children and their families an alternative so that they don't have to go to a mosque. Whether the mosque is benign or not, they don't have a curriculum that matches what's needed for progress and to be part of the modern world. So what they're seeing is families want to put their children into schools which will teach them a rounded curriculum and prepare them for a future and at least give them a chance at a future. So it's a willing pool out there. And as I say, there's so much to be hopeful about, but it requires effort, patience, and a smart, strategic civilian effort there.
Christiana Amanpour is our guest, and our phone number is 800-486-8655. Her documentary, and an important one it is, Generation Islam, is airing on CNN this coming Thursday. It's well worth your viewing. To your phone calls in just one moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Christiana Amanpour is our guest, and our phone number is 800-486-8655. Carl from Peshtigo. Hi, Carl.
Good morning, Kathleen. Such wonderful programming this morning. My question is the documentary going to address the foundation or work at addressing the foundation and what created the animosity of Islam and vice versa with the United States?
Well, thank you for that question. You know, this documentary is almost a follow-on from what we did address in regards to your inquiry there with our 6-hour series a couple of years ago called God's Warriors. We did address the issue of extremism across many religions and how it affects society, how it affects culture and politics, the intersection of religion with culture and politics, and particularly with regard to the United States. Look, what's been happening is there's been a spike in aggravation and animosity between the U.S. and the Muslim world since 9/11. Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden attacked the United States and basically declared war on the U.S. And then the U.S. responded in Afghanistan by routing Al-Qaeda and Taliban, and that was generally perceived around the world as a good thing. The Taliban were nobody's heroes, nobody's friends, and it was generally perceived, even in the Islamic world, as a good thing. But then the goodwill for the United States started to sap away and seep away with the Iraq War. And in the intervening years since the Iraq War and now, attempts have been made at rapprochement with the Muslim world. And one of the interesting things that I came about in this documentary and working on the research for this was that the level of extremism in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, for instance, has dropped dramatically in the past 7 years since the immediate post 9/11 moment. In Afghanistan, only 8% or so of the people support the Taliban. The rest pretty much support progress, prosperity, America, except for the things we were talking about just before, the civilian casualties, and the idea of democratically elected leaders. In Pakistan, 74% of the people now support education for girls and boys. Now, girls and boys' education is sort of a litmus test in some of these nations. So this is an immense improvement, and many, many people are rejecting and renouncing the kind of extremism and pro-Bin Ladenism that they sort of paraded around in the immediate aftermath of 9/11. So there's good news out there, and therefore this is what presents an opportunity for the United States to grab hold of and to work on.
Yeah. Tell us the story, which I found fascinating, of the gentleman who was meeting with groups of mullahs who had been pretty extreme, and people became more moderate. Nobody knows this kind of stuff is going on.
Well, exactly. I mean, it was a discovery to us, too. His name is Azhar Hussain. He's Pakistani-American, and he has made it his mission to travel from home in Washington, D.C., to the Madrasa Belt in Pakistan. And there, he has found that many of the madrasas, which have this reputation for being the sort of breeding grounds of militants and extremists, many of these madrasas are actually operating in ignorance. They have just a religious-based curriculum, and what they want is help in being able to reform that. Obviously, one of the things that has brought them to this point is this hatred against the madrasas by the West, by others, and the targeting of madrasas by the U.S. drones and other such things. So they've sat up and they've said, why? What's going on? And many of these madrasas don't actually teach militantism or extremism or anti-Americanism, but what they do teach is a very, very narrow curriculum with nothing that's required for survival in a modern world. So what this man, Azhar Hussain, is doing is going out there and helping them broaden their curriculums. And he's finding, surprisingly, he said, that so many of these madrasas want to sign up. And he said thousands. I mean, it's a huge story that is almost untold.
Right. Yeah, it is a huge story. That's what I like about the documentary. There are a lot of stories you're telling, and I mean, forgive me, maybe my thoughts about the state of journalism are not as high as yours, but it seems to me as I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, whoa, there are very few people who are telling this kind of story. Would put themselves at risk in a place that would put the resources forward in order to be able to give us this story and to find out the story in the first place.
Well, look, I think what you just said, the aggregate is important. There's very few people who have a network who will provide the resources and give it airtime
to do this.
There are many, many people who want to tell these stories, but they're not given the support that telling these stories requires. And that's why I'm really pleased that CNN has this amazing documentary unit, that it really does go out and goes to these far-flung places to try to give more depth, context, and understanding to some of the stories that are front and center in our experience and what's going on right at the moment, like Afghanistan, Pakistan, the Middle East, etc.,
right.
Iran, Iraq, wherever you might look, there's so much going on and so little understanding and so little depth of knowledge and journalism coming out about it.
Yeah.
So I'm glad about that. And I just think that, look, the United States of America is such a powerful country, such an important country, has such an amazing, you know, citizenry, has such an amazing influence around the world, such a huge reach. It's not all right for foreign news to be basically banned from the airwaves. I mean, I'm exaggerating to make a point, but you know that it's so difficult to get foreign news on domestic airwaves in the United States, and it's really a shame in all senses of the word.
It is a shame, and you consider how important it is to our security, and you ask that repeatedly in the documentary, that people talk about our security in this country being closely linked to what's going on in Afghanistan and Pakistan.
And I think that the American people, at least people who talk to me, who write to me, who email me, they want to know more. And if they only but knew how many of their fellow citizens, these individuals who we profile in this 2 hours, who are there, whether it's Marnie Gustafson, a woman who comes from the west coast of the United States, whose parents were working in Afghanistan in the 60s and 70s, who grew up in Afghanistan, and who's then come back with her family to do what she can to help, for instance, the children who are out on the street and who have no shelter or education. And little by little, child by child, one family at a time, she's making an effect. And so many people like her. I mentioned Greg Mortensen and so many others. I mean, I was stunned to see Afghanistan has a version of American Idol.
I was about to ask you about
that. Star.
Yeah.
It's the most popular program in Afghanistan. Who would have thought that?
Who would have thought that? And it's also serving a purpose because it's bringing different cultures together.
Exactly. And that's why I think there's so much for the U.S. and the West to work with in these places. There's so much to grab hold of, to latch onto, to build on, and to turn this around. You know, I spoke again to Admiral Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to the other commanders on the ground. Look, they're concerned. They're worried. You know, in many areas, it's touch and go. Who's going to win? But they know that it will not be by the military alone, that it must be by the civilian process. And I think that if Americans knew how much good could be done by a coherent, strategically smart application of America's civilian effort, and to give as much civilian effort as military effort, I think if Americans knew how much good and how this could be turned around, I think they would probably ask their political leaders to be much more forward-leaning on allowing that. I mean, I've been stunned, for instance, that senior members of Congress have said that they want to cut off the whole process of the civilian effort after a year. A year is not enough.
Mm-hmm. No, obviously, because when you highlight what's happening, it's just remarkable.
Yeah, unless people think that, you know, 7 or 8 years of this spending has not achieved success, it's because it's been incoherent, ad hoc, mm-hmm. spending bad money after good or good money after bad, whatever the expression is. And it really does need a reform of the civilian effort, and I believe it can bring success.
Right. The other thing we have to make mention, because who knew this was happening too, you've got the American Idol, but then you have people singing verses from the Quran.
Right.
What a contrast.
Well, it's a contrast, but it's what it shows is that it's culturally appropriate. Mm-hmm. So you know, nobody's talking about building a little America in the middle of Afghanistan. What's possible is a democracy Afghan style, a culture Afghan style, economy and education Afghan style, but Afghanistan, not the Taliban. And so there are many religious and cultural people in Afghanistan. It's a very religious community. And so while Afghan Star is hugely popular and highly viewed, so too is what we nicknamed Quran Star. And that was done to appease the mullahs and the other conservative fundamentalists there who kicked up a fuss about Afghan Star, the American Idol ripoff there. And now they're quiet. And that's a win-win situation for everybody.
Right. Christiana Amanpour is our guest. Feel free to join us. We have a few minutes left with her. I don't mean to ignore you. If you have anything you'd like to talk to her about, give us a ring, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. You do wonderful reporting from a lot of places. Let's spend a few minutes, please, on Iran, Christiane, because I'm interested in what's going to happen there and how we're getting news of what's going to happen there during the course of the next year. Was it hard to work sources in Iran? Is it hard to get the truth?
I think it's very difficult at the moment, and it's doing nobody any favors, least of all Iran itself, by kicking out independent journalists and banning any kind of objective news coverage from there. Now, I spent many, many years covering Iran, and the truth is I could get a lot of factual news out. I got a lot of the picture out. It's not like we were censored. It's not like we were unable to report what we saw. We were able to report what we saw. And therefore, for the last many, many years, we've had a pretty good picture of what's going on in there. I was there for the election in June. I was there throughout the post-election crisis. And then, like many others, got thrown out about a week after that. It's an incredible moment in the history of Iran right now. It's a moment in which there's a real, genuine split in the highest levels of power. The reformist politicians, the people who took part in the demonstrations, are paying a high price for having done that. And it's unclear as to how it's going to proceed. But what is very, very interesting and different is that so many of the conservatives are also finding fault with how the regime has dealt with the post-election crisis. So much is now open on Iranian news organizations and news sources, not to mention the web. So many things are being reported from out there. It's like a huge, big window has blown open internally.
Mm.
And that's really, really significant and a real change.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out.
Wendy from Eau Claire, hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to applaud Christiane Amanpour for everything she has done. She is so courageous. And I just question if you will be speaking about the Palestinians in Gaza in the near future at all, of what they are going through.
Yeah, it's part of the documentary. We just didn't get to it in our amount of time.
I know, we haven't gotten to it, but it's the whole second hour, Wendy.
Right, I'm sorry.
Stay tuned, because it's very important and very surprising as well. I was really surprised when I went there, because although, again, I've been covering it, I covered the war back in January, but it was very difficult to get inside Gaza. And when I did get in, I didn't know what I was going to find, a black hole full of, you know, terrible terrorists all over the place. No, I found actually something again that gave hope for the future. While there is the militantism, while there is the Hamas government, there is also a deep willingness amongst the, you know, legions of young people there, the adolescents, the teenagers, the young adults, the children, again, to be part of the world. And in, they're very educated, they're very aware. Many of the young people I talk to are on the net chatting with so-called friends in the United States. There's Facebook. There are all those social networking tools that they're also using. So they, it's a very surprising story, and I hope you'll stay tuned to watch the second hour as well.
And a very dramatic story in some instances, isn't it? Yeah. Thanks, Wendy. Catherine from Madison. Hi.
Hi. Well, years ago in Afghanistan, when the bombing stopped the first time, the Italian government asked Patch Adams to go to Afghanistan. And he went with his clowns. He has a traveling troupe of clowns. And he told them he'd only go with if they gave him medical supplies. And the video is incredibly moving, particularly where a young infant who's been burned badly is just screaming as his bandages are being changed. There's a clown playing a violin, and the mother's there, and they, you know, give him the medication. And it's just moving. It's been around for years, and no one has seen it. So I think it's something else that should be looked at so that people can get an idea of what it's really like. Seeing a bombed-out village where people are standing around and people are clowning and laughing, you know, after everything they've been through, I think people would have a lot of compassion and a lot more understanding, along with, you know, Christine's documentary. This little thing should be.
I agree, and thank you for that observation. Look, what we've tried to do in this whole 2 hours, whether it's Afghanistan, Pakistan, Gaza, or the West Bank, we've tried to focus on the human stories because, as I say, there's so much that sort of inhuman and impersonal about the breaking news, the facts, the figures, the headlines. When you get down to it, honestly, a mother in the United States will identify with the troubles and the challenges of a mother in Afghanistan.
Yes.
A kid in the United States will identify with his or her counterpart in Afghanistan or in Gaza, as will the young adults. And it's all, you know, I came away with this strong feeling being reinforced that, you know what, young people are essentially the same everywhere.
And on that note, we have to say goodbye. Christiane, you're wonderful.
You
thank you very much.
They're aware.
Thank you very much for being with us. Well, that was great, huh? Good hour. Thank you, Rhonda Fanning, for producing this hour. Jalema Noel for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. And thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. We'll be with you tomorrow at 9.